Family Ties, the first talk on the life of Joseph, Jacob's son, in a series entitled Our Times Are in His Hands, was presented by Dave Smith on July 3, 2011 at Reformation Fellowship. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2011. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction. All other rights reserved.
Jack finished in Romans, obviously a very closely argued book of deep theological assertions, and Jack took us through it with his customary skill and clarity. I thought maybe for my 5 weeks, there's 5 weeks in July, 5 Sundays in July, I thought for my 5 weeks I would do a little different kind of literature from the Bible. I thought I'd do a narrative section, kind of a character study from the book of Genesis. And along the way, I'll suggest some pretty simple, pretty basic life lessons for us, things that I think are resident in the text that we could draw out that hopefully will be of some benefit to us in our everyday life. Actually, there's been a little change, as it turns out. I won't actually be speaking today after all. Something came up, and so I took the liberty of finding a replacement, so we're going to have a guest speaker for the guest speaker. Hi, my name is Joseph. I was asked to come here to tell a little bit about my background, my life history. It'll be a kind of an introduction to what the other guy is going to talk about in the next several weeks. I lived a long time ago, about 3,500 years or so. My dad was Jacob. My mother was Rachel. My grandfather was Isaac, and his dad was Abraham. So that's the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and then I was in the next generation. And as you recall, Abraham was the one who God came to and told about some wonderful things that were going to happen in and through our family over the centuries. Most especially, out of our family would come the Messiah, the Deliverer, the one who would take away the guilt of everyone who wanted his guilt taken away. Or I guess in your era, you'd say his or her guilt. Anyway, it's any person's guilt would be taken away if the person wants it through the Messiah. In fact, different scholars have said that my life and story remind them of the life of this other one, but I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. I was asked to talk about my early years, and then in the weeks to come, the other clan will come back, and he will talk about some specific episodes as they occurred and draw lessons from them. For this week, it's more of an overview. Today, I'll talk about my early life, my family ties, you might want to say, although Michael J. Fox will not be portraying me if they ever do a movie about my life. They should, though, I think, do a movie about my life, because there's a lot of interesting things that have happened about my life. I guess there was a Broadway play, right, about me, although I've never seen it. Has anyone seen that? Joseph and the Technicolor, the Andrew Lloyd Webbers. Is it any good? Yeah, it's pretty good. Did you see it in New York? No? I've never seen it, don't know anything about it. Except that, as we'll find out in a couple of weeks, it's possible that it really isn't a multicolored coat. just a little point that we'll get to a little bit later. But the thing that maybe I'm most known for may not actually be a multicolored coat, but we'll learn about that more later. I'm barely mentioned in the New Testament, But I'm all over the place in the Old Testament. That is to say, there's a lot about me. There's probably more about me than any other Old Testament character. There's a big chunk, a big swath in the book of Genesis. My birth is recorded in chapter 30 of Genesis, and then there's a series of chapters that talk about what's going on with my family, which I'm present during the time but not talked about, and then more specifically about me. The narrative continues in chapter 37 all the way to the end of the book of Genesis, all the way through chapter 50. So, my early life, to quote what Bill Cosby would say many years later, I started out as a child, a baby, of course. Maybe they called me Joey. I was baby Joseph, but maybe they called me Joey as a kid. Maybe I ran around playing kids' games wearing a green jersey with a number 3 on it, and on the back it says Ducks. But I do remember that I was never paid 36 million shekels to play professional football. That much I remember. I remember a lot of other things, too, about my youth. Some of these things were really pleasant, happy, enjoyable things. Other circumstances were really awful and, in fact, unjust. I didn't really like the bad stuff. I didn't like being treated unjustly. I wasn't pleased when my dad sent me to help my older brothers, and 9 of the 10 of them threw me into a pit out in the middle of nowhere and left me for dead, and then casually munched on a meal while I was crying out for my life from the pit. I wasn't very happy at that point. Maybe some of you have been mistreated by family or friends. It's not a lot of fun. Later on, I had another bad thing happen, this time after I did something right, and as a consequence, something bad happened to me. Now, we're all accustomed to thinking in terms of doing something unwise or immoral. Often will bring some adverse impact to us, adverse consequences. You sow what you reap what you sow. I always get that reversed. You reap what you sow and all that. But in this case, I did something that was clearly right and God-honoring, and I received a very adverse circumstance. The situation was that the wife of my boss came to me day after day after day to try to seduce me to sleep with her. Now, I guess in your modern culture, for many men, that might be a dream come true, but for me, it was an absolute nightmare. I refused day after day after day, and then one day, guess what happened? No, I didn't give in to her, though as a sinner, I'm certainly capable of messing up in all kinds of ways. And just as an aside, a little advice from a 3,500-year-old man here to you. May I recommend that as you live your life, if you hear about somebody in a who's messed up in a particular way, who's fallen in some way, and you think to yourself, I'd never do that, or I'm above that, I'm beyond that, may I recommend that be a mindset that you never take? Because as soon as we think that everything's A-okay, if we let down our guard, then that sometimes is when trouble can come. In my case, by the grace of God, I continued to refuse, and I didn't give in. But what happened was this. One day she grabbed me, and I ran away. But then after that, she falsely accused me of attempted rape. And her husband, my boss, believed her. Very bad news for young Joseph. I was thrown into a dungeon for years. And the reason I was thrown there was because I was honoring God, because I did what was right by my fellow man and woman and by God. I understand, not in this community of believers, but in your modern culture in general, I understand that there are teachers who will teach you that if you do right, then you will always get nothing but pleasant circumstances, pleasant blessings from God. Well, they're wrong, people who teach that. It might sell a lot of books in the Christian bookstores, but it isn't true. For me, that circumstance was really hard. I didn't like the unfairness. I wanted to try to figure a way out of the dungeon. I didn't like it, but I also learned eventually that something else was going on during that hard stuff. There is someone bigger and stronger, someone wiser and more powerful than any person on earth. That person obviously is God, and God has a plan that often includes really hard stuff, even though it's a good plan in the big picture. It's not always fun, but it's a good plan from an all-good and all-wise God, a God who always is preparing every circumstance specifically for us, each one of us, that we will walk in, and specifically preparing us for every circumstance that comes our way. Did I say that right, or did I say the same thing twice? You get my drift. I also realized that I was not a hapless victim of cold, impersonal chance or random events, though sometimes it felt that way, and there were so-called scientists around me at the time who pretty much thought so, that everything that happens is a random event. And I learned that that's not the case. Maybe there are people in your day who also think that everything happens according to a random notion rather than according to a wise plan by a benevolent God. So since I trusted God and his good plan, generally, I didn't really whine, as it turns out. I didn't really feel sorry for myself. At least it's not recorded in the text that I did. I'm human and I didn't like it, obviously, but I didn't really play the victim, at least according to the text. I didn't accuse God of lousy planning or lousy management, horrible execution of what he's doing on earth. I didn't take on the mentality of a victim, and often people have said that my life story is a wonderful picture of a later Bible verse, which you just went through in the book of Romans. You recall the verse from the end of chapter 8 from 4 or 5 years ago, whenever Jack was in chapter 8. We know that God causes all things, not some, to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. If you love God, then that verse is applicable for you as well, and it's great news indeed. Not that the good is going to happen in this life all the time. It may be hardship for a long time, or it may be good, but ultimately, things do work in God's wise plan for our benefit. Now, it's also not the case that I was passive in my life. Sometimes I hear when people think about a verse like that, they kind of think, well, that means I just throw up my hands and I just sort of let life happen to me, that I'm living life in a passive mode. That's not how I lived. I was active and energetic in my life. When I was in the pit, I tried to get out until my brothers decided instead of killing me, they would sell me and make a few shekels on me. I also tried to get out of the dungeon as well. So trusting that God is at work does not equal passivity. what it means is that beneath the activity of our lives, we can trust our Creator, that His activity, that His plans, that what He brings is beneficial to us. Here's what helped me, as I recall. It helped me to when I had thoughts accusing God of being inattentive, I by the grace of God sought to fight them off and refuse to nourish thoughts that I knew were not true. So I didn't really fall victim to self-pitying particularly. I didn't think that God was asleep at the switch. I didn't think that He was off at Starbucks or the goat not thinking about me. I didn't think that He had turned off His cell phone. I didn't think any of those things. I figured that He knew what He was doing. And the thing that enabled me to maintain that perspective was this, and maybe it'll help you as well if you're ever in a pit or a dungeon. My thought was this: I did not look to my circumstances, whether they're good circumstances or bad, to determine if God was good. The circumstances do not dictate the goodness of God. I knew that God was good. Whether I was on top of the world, which was literally the case for a long period of time, or whether I was buried underground. So I trusted Him, and you can too. He's the same God. The God I knew 3,500 years ago is the same God available to you. The God who rules and overrules in all circumstances. And I know that's the case. I lived it. Just ask me. That reality, it seems to me, can give people genuine hope and encouragement in whatever the circumstances are in their lives. My observation in the modern world is people who are followers of God, it seems like there's at least a couple kinds of temptations that circumstances can bring. Sometimes, if the circumstances are really good, people might tend to be tempted to think that they don't really need God anymore. If circumstances are really bad, really adverse, really horrible, then our temptation is, maybe I don't want God anymore. So circumstances can be risky, can be tempting, whether they're really, really great or really horrible. The bottom line is to remember the author of the circumstances and remember that He's good and knows what He's doing. And speaking of circumstances, I've mentioned a couple, which we'll hear about more in the weeks to come. But what I was supposed to talk about today was my early childhood, where I'm not really mentioned by name in the Bible, other than in verse 30 where it talks about my birth. But in the next several chapters, there are a fair number of episodes that happen to my family. There are a lot of family goings on. Even though my name wasn't mentioned, I was there because I was part of the family. And I had some hard goings on as a kid. Life was hard for me at times when I was young. Maybe you did too. Maybe you had a hard time as a child. Perhaps my story of what happened can be of encouragement to you as well, as you think about what happened in your life experience. I had a hard experience as a kid, maybe you did too, and God can be helpful. I hope you'll read my story in the Bible. It's very, very interesting. I understand also that today a lot of people say that they trust God and believe the Bible, but they don't all that often read the Bible. And in my view, that's a lost opportunity. And I would encourage you to read not just about me, but other passages to learn about who God is and what He's like and what He does And that's the end of my digression. So my, or that digression, my family was truly dysfunctional. Is that the word that they use these days, a dysfunctional family? Well, that can accurately be said about my family. But the fact that my family was dysfunctional did not hold me back from what God had in store for me. I was the second youngest in a family of 12 sons and one daughter. For a long time, I was the baby of the family, and I received significant favoritism from my dad, and as a result of that, significant hatred from my brothers. They didn't like it that Dad favored me. We had one father, all of us kids, but four different mothers. My father, Jacob, had two wives, and at different times, both of those, and they were sisters to each other, at different times, both of them asked their husband, Jacob, my dad, to act like a husband to their maids. And so there were four mothers of all these children, and all around at the same time. So, yes, I am Joseph, but despite all those wives per husband, I'm not related to Joseph Smith. That's a whole different family. My dad, Jacob, really loved my mom, Rachel. Rachel was his favorite. In fact, my grandfather on my mother's side, that is Rachel's dad, Laban, he was quite a deceiver and conniver, and he tricked my dad into working for him in very difficult circumstances, kind of indentured servitude type circumstances, for 14 years just to receive consent for the marriage. My dad, however, was also a major league deceiver, along with his father-in-law, and so they had some problems between one another, my dad and my grandfather. My dad had in-law problems, so that's not just a modern phenomenon, in case any of you struggle with that. So what my dad did, in his trickiness, he pulled a sneaky trick when I was about 6 or 7 years old, about the age when kids start playing t-ball around here, right? One night at dinner, Dad announced that we were going to move away from where we were, which was my grandfather's area, and we were going to move back to his homeland. Now, to me, as a 6 or 7 year old, that felt pretty bad. I didn't really want to leave the world I'd always known. I'd always lived there. I'd never lived anyplace else. And I didn't especially want to be removed from my grandpa Laban. And worse, we snuck out of town without even saying goodbye, as if we were criminals or something. But then what happened? Guess what? Grandpa chased after us and caught up with us. When he caught up with us, the grown-ups talked for a long time while I was supposed to be going to sleep. The next day, Grandpa kissed us all goodbye, and we left, and I was taken away. And you know, as I think about it, there were numerous circumstances in my life where I was taken someplace that I didn't especially want to go. It wasn't my choice to go many of the places that I was taken. When I was 6 or 7, being with my family, I guess that's just how it is. There were other occasions when I was an adult and taken places I really didn't want to go. But what helped me in those circumstances as well was that wherever I went, and I don't want to sound trite about this, but wherever I went, God was there too. And not only that, but he had mapped out my itinerary. So it did not take God by surprise. In fact, it was part of what he intended for my life story. So all those times when I was taken places that I just as soon not go, it helped me to remember that God was on the journey with me always, and always working out his wise plan, even if I didn't really understand it at the time. in that occasion, when we were headed back to my father's homeland, as we got close to the destination, I could tell that my dad was pretty nervous, even fearful. And he wasn't afraid of robbers around or animals or something like that, but instead he was afraid of his own brother, nervous about meeting his own brother, my uncle Esau. You'll want to read about why that was the case as well. Well, we eventually got to my dad's family's homeland, and things went fine for me for a while until within a fairly short period of time, I had several very painful and scarring circumstances that happened in close proximity to one another. When I was a young teenager, my mom, remember my father's favorite, had another baby, so only her second baby. So now I had a younger brother to play with and to blame when there was, you know, problems that came up. Well, Benjamin did it. But a horribly painful thing happened when baby Benjamin was born. My mother didn't make it. She died. And that hurt. That hurt a lot at my vulnerable age. Perhaps some of you have a similar story in your background. And then another bad thing happened. My older brother Reuben snuck into the bedroom with the mother of his and my brothers, some of his and my brothers. At the time, I didn't really know what happened in there, but I do know that after my dad found out that it was just awful. And then I lost my grandpa Isaac. Now, he was 180 years old, so wasn't exactly unexpected, but it still hurt. It still impacted me, especially in light of all those other things that happened right nearby. You know, as I think about it, I really did have quite a tough time growing up, tough time in my growing up years. And maybe that's true of some of you. Maybe as a result, you feel trapped or doomed or stuck because of your background. Well, it was hard for me as well, but I also learned some things that I'd like to suggest to you in case they may be of benefit to you. First, we were a dysfunctional family, but you know what? Every family is a dysfunctional family because every family is filled with sinners in need of the grace of God. Now, not every family is dysfunctional in the sense of all of the things that happened in my life, but every family is dysfunctional in that we as human beings don't treat one another well all the time. We just don't. We, as a human race, are flawed, where our natural disposition is to think of ourselves first and foremost. I've noticed in your world that many people don't really want to think that they ever do anything wrong. Now, the clown who asked me to pinch hit for him today has told me about some of you, and I know that for some of you, this isn't especially a problem. Some of you may be, as Ron, I'm told this guy's name is Ron, as Ron likes to say, fall off the horse on the other side, or words to that effect. Was that Luther who said that? Luther came way after me. You know, I don't know if he talked much about me or not. I haven't read everything that he had to say. But falling off the other side of the horse, saying that I'm absolute, we think of ourselves as absolute scum, and everything is always our fault. I mean, that we're quick to blame ourselves no matter what happens, and have a hard time forgiving ourselves and so on. That may well be true. I suspect it is true of some people here. But it also might be true of some people here, and I know it's true of some other people out there, where we as human beings, we just don't ever want to take responsibility for anything. We're always quick to blame somebody else, and the somebody else depends on the circumstance or depends on our mindset and our worldview. Some of us think that everything bad is because of corporate America, or everything bad is because of the government, or everything bad is because of the schools, or on and on and on. But friends, the real problem, the Bible says, is us. It's individuals who sin, who are diseased with what might be called self-focus-itis. The guy who will be speaking the next few weeks, unless after today the plug gets pulled, but the guy who's planning to speak the next few weeks came from sinful parents. And that guy's children has sinful parents as well. No offense, Kay. Now, some of us in our era don't really like to face into this, but unless we face this, then it seems to me that God's goodness is only kind of ho-hum to us instead of, wow, what a stunning development, what a stunning surprise and great news that God overcame the penalty of our sin and promises one day to overcome the power of sin as well. That's fantastic news. But instead, if we're not aware that we are the problem, then we think, oh, well, yeah, forgiveness, that's real nice, but I don't have that great a need. When we mix together in a family or a church community or a broader community, and we are a bunch of self-promoting, self-focused people, it's a little bit like a car trying to go in a straight line when all four wheels are out of alignment in different directions, and collisions are inevitable. However, sin and dysfunction does not stop God. Look at me, my background. God uses our backgrounds in His master plan. He handpicks our backgrounds and our experiences. For me, there's no human reason why I could have escaped the mess of my family, the lying, the conflict, the incest, the betrayal, the murderous hatred. But God chose to pull me out of that. I guess a way to say what I'm suggesting here is this, that a dysfunctional family background does not destine people to disaster, because God is bigger than our backgrounds. A second lesson, I was wounded and scarred by clearly bad stuff as a kid, but I made it. I was not forced to live as if it's a second-class life or an alternate inferior game plan. And the reason that I was not destined for disaster was not because I'm so special, but because of God. God did it. So I trusted Him, whether in the dungeon because of a weasel of a woman or in what could be called your White House. Wherever I was in my life experience, I sought to trust God. And then third, earlier I referred to a New Testament verse toward the end of Romans chapter 8. I have lived that, and I would say I'm living proof of it. If I were you, I would value that truth. I would encourage you to live your life with that reality as a solid rock of security in a chaotic world. Not that you won't get kicked around, not that you won't get belted in the stomach now and then, but we need not despair. We need not give up or give in. Maybe for some of you, even today, you're facing really difficult stuff. Heartache, sorrow, betrayal. There are multiple difficulties out there, aren't there? Very difficult job situation, loneliness in your marriage. You're in a pit, maybe, in a dungeon. Maybe you're falsely accused of something by a coworker or a loved one or someone else. A thing to remember, it seems to me, is that God is big, God is good, And God is in that dungeon of circumstances with you. He's the same God who led me through my pit and dungeon and my prosperity. And take it from me, even though his ways certainly are mysterious, he is without a doubt trustworthy and wise and good. I think that's the theme of my biography. Well, there's a lot more to my story. That's mostly a bit of background. It would make, I think, a pretty good novel or Hollywood script, except it happens to be true. A lot of stuff happened in my life. Family betrayal, international famine, deceit, lust, seduction, false accusation, undeserved imprisonment, unexpected plot twists, but also honor and hope and forgiveness. And all of that with a central theme of the God of the universe, who in my life proved that all things do work together for good for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. Our times are in his hands. Shalom. Okay, I'm back. We have some time for questions or comments, as usual. I guess there will be a mic. I was thinking also, because of the subject matter, in addition to our normal kinds of questioning that may go on here, which is great, that also it's possible that maybe some of you have had a life circumstance or two where you were in a horrible pit or in a dungeon of circumstances, but God brought you through that. And if you wanted to tell us about that, that could be honoring to God, glorifying to God, and also encouraging to others of us who either right now may be facing something or sometime in the near future may face something. Or perhaps there's somebody here today who right now feels like you're in a dungeon and you'd appreciate letting us know so that we can care about you and pray for you. So
it's too bad Joseph went away because I had some questions for him. maybe you can
put it back on.
Communicate them.
You know, as I was starting to put that on, I said to Kay, "This is goofy." And then she said, "It's better than a bathrobe." So
many colors.
I guess thank God for small favors.
So what I was going to ask Joseph was, in the stories that we hear about him, he always is the good guy. He's subject to injustice, a lot of injustice, but he's, as near as we can tell, he always makes the right decisions. He always trusts God. So what I wanted to ask him is, he alluded to the fact that we're all sinners, so therefore he must be a sinner. Can God be trusted with my sin? What if I am in a difficult situation and it's quite possible that I contributed to it or maybe caused it completely? Can God be trusted with that, or will he go away because I brought it on myself?
Can God be trusted with my sin?
Will all things work to good for me who act like God's enemy, though I don't want to be it?
Well, I think, yeah, we can trust God with that, if I understand your question right.
If I'm a believer and I sin,
bring something on yourself,
does that also work for good?
Yes. That's how I understand the Bible. What do you think?
I'm hoping so.
Yeah. Well,
because my situations are, I'm much less a victim of other people's sin, more I'm a victim of my own sin. I am my own worst enemy.
Yeah, and I think as we, the longer we are Christians, I think sometimes we get discouraged that we don't feel like we're making more progress toward genuinely trusting God more and more. But I think sometimes it just seems like we're not making progress because I think we are more aware of the ways that we're flawed and so it doesn't feel like we're growing, when in fact, when we first came to faith, we maybe wouldn't have noticed the flaws that we now see so clearly because God's at work in us. But yeah, I think absolutely. Even when we bring stuff on our own, and bring bad stuff to us, sometimes we just mess up when we sort of don't mean to. Other times we're defiant and we know what we're doing, but we mess up. But if we're truly God's people, then I'd hang on to that verse, and eventually God will bring us back to wanting him. Does that make sense to you?
No, this is a response to Margaret. When God says all things work together for good, the verses go on to say that it's for our sanctification. And so I think even when we sin, one of the things that comes from that is we realize we're sinners and how much we need the grace of God. And I think that is a good that God is bringing about. It may not be good. We may have to suffer the consequences of our sin, and that may not be good. But I think even just recognizing more of the goodness of God and of our need for that goodness, I think that is the good that he might bring about.
Kay will be up here next week instead. I wish. I keep trying to get her to. But thank you. Hi.
Hi. I'm Jan. I just remember a particular time that I was really at a crossroads and was a severe temptation to go a particular direction. And I had this overwhelming sense that even if I did that, God would love me anyway. And it was that sense of his love that kept me from going there. And so I think somehow to realize that he does love us, and it's the sense and awareness of his love and forgiveness often that can prevent us from going places that he would rather we didn't go.
That's great. That's very encouraging. Thank you. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Joseph. Thank you so much. I love Joseph's story. It's such an awesome story of redemption. I'm so glad to be here today. And I love having an opportunity to talk about the goodness of God. And some of you know my story. My husband here, Jim, is my third husband. And I started out at a pretty young age with really horrendous relationships with men. Some of you here counseled me when I was going through my second divorce. My son was 14 months old. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Dave. And I remember then being absolutely devastated and thinking, how am I going to manage? I didn't know that God really loved me. I didn't know I could trust in him. And in my case, I was both clearly sinned against and had sinned against. Anyway, what God showed me during that time is his absolute faithfulness, his absolute goodness. He took me through some really difficult times. The most difficult year of my life when my son, I have a son who's just turned 26, when he was 3 and I had to return to work, and it was a night, I would wake up in sweats because I was at a job that I was not qualified for. And God in his goodness sent a person who was not a believer. She met with me daily to help me plan and do the work I needed to do. Usually it would be every 2 weeks. Anyway, I could go on and on about God's goodness. And what God has done in my life that is so exciting is the redemption he has brought in so many levels of my life. I love to talk about God's goodness. I know him personally. He's just a wonderful God, whether circumstances are really hard are really wonderful. God is always good. Thank you for reminding us of that. But specifically back to the marriage that I had the great honor the last couple years with Jim of being part of. It's called Divorce Care. It's a non-denominational group that is biblically based and walking through other people who are experiencing the hell of separation and divorce, most of them not of their choice. And I get to share that God is good. And people have asked me, people who don't know him, is this really true? You know, can you really trust him? And I say, yes, you can really trust God. We don't know what's going to happen, but we can trust God. So thank you for sharing.
Thank you very much, Becky. Really appreciate it. Hi, Judy.
Hello. I just wanted to say that, kind of in response to Margaret, too, it seems like over the years, the problems that come into our lives, or come into my life, I guess I just have to make it personal, are often a result of my own sinful choices, deliberate sinful choices. But I think a lot of it, too, is just a lack of understanding of who God is, or the fact that I am actually making a choice. I think when I grew up, I grew up in a home that was very rigid, and the church I grew up in was very rigid, and I was just told what to do, and I did it, and I was a good kid, and I never got in trouble, and you know, everything was just perfect. And so I didn't ever recognize my own sinfulness because I was always being good. I was told to be good. I was always being good. So a lot of times I didn't really feel like I was making a choice. I just did whatever was expected of me. But I never really thought about whether I was following what God wanted of me or if I was making a choice for him. Or, you know what I mean? It's just like my life just sort of went on.
Yep.
And then I could look back on things and say, well, that was a big mistake. That was a huge blunder. And I just did that, not even thinking about whether I should consider my choice and whether there was a right choice or a wrong choice.
Mm-hmm.
I just went ahead with my life. And when I got married, well, he seemed like the right person because that was the next thing in my life. After I graduated from college, then I met him, so he must be right. And I never really knew that I had choices to make for a long time.
Wow.
Now I look back on my life and I can see how the choices I made really caused a lot of things to happen in my life that were negative, positive too, but a lot of negative things. But I think it was blunders that I made, and I don't know whether, I think I could call them sinful because they were just made out of human nature. Human nature, the sinfulness of myself, not sinful choices necessarily. But whether they were blindly made or whether they were chosen, God has been faithful to use all of those things in my life to bring me to where I am now.
Yeah.
And I can't say that I regret some choices, but I can't say that I wish they were different. Because I'm at the place I am because God has brought me there.
Yeah.
So.
Through the blunders we make.
Right. Yeah. And that is really gives me a lot of peace to know that I don't have to worry about what happened in the past or blame myself because it's past.
Right.
And God has brought me through that. And there's hope for the future because I will continue to blunder.
Yeah.
And God is still in charge.
Yeah.
And I am who I am now. And I will be who I am in the future because he's faithful.
Yeah, I think it sounds like what I'm understanding you to say, Judy, is that it gives us a great deal of freedom to live our lives when we don't get shocked when we do mess up, but also recognize that when we do, that's not outside of God's intention for our overall story.
And when I look at what God has caused to happen in my life, it is such a blessing. I mean, I look at my children, I look at the relationship I have with my children, how God has blessed that and kept it, kept us close when it could have been a disaster. And I just retired from my job.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Just a few weeks ago, I was a teacher and had a retirement party. I worked with the same staff for 21 years in the same school.
Wow.
And so, of course, at the party, everybody's talking about, you know, what they remember about me and all that. And it felt good, but what really felt good about it was that what they said about me was not what I was striving to do, but what God brought about in relationships. And that was just, it was such a blessing to hear that because there was things that people said that I was totally blown away by that I didn't know how my life had touched other people's lives, and God did that.
Oh, that's very encouraging. Thank you. That's a good word, encouraging. I'm glad also, Judy, you mentioned a distinction when it came to decision-making and choices, that sometimes we face choices where it really is moral versus immoral, right versus wrong. But there's a lot of other choices that really aren't. We can make choices that are kind of morally neutral, and some choices may be wiser than others or more foolish, but it's not always a matter of morality or immorality. It's just choices that come our way. So thanks a lot for sharing. Anybody else? Okay, we're done. Thanks very much. See you next week.